order.
We have a long list today, and the subject matter today is House Bill 2324, generally known as the Civil Commitment Bill, in which there is substantial interest. First, we will do invited testimony from Representative Kopetsky, Senator Jeanette Hamby, and then from the governor's representative, Janice Yaden, and other witnesses who will testify from those three viewpoints on the bill we have before us. And then after those witnesses have testified, we will open it up to the testimony list that witness registration that I have here that's almost full already. If you haven't signed up and wish to testify, we have another sheet over here by the coffee machine to sign up. And we expect that we'll have an afternoon that'll last some time. We'll probably take a break right around 3:15 and come back and run as long as we have to. With that, I'll open the hearing on House Bill 2324. Committee members, any comments or questions before we begin?
I think we really probably should say that for the audience from the looks of them out there.
Okay, Representative Bellamy. Our first witness on, and just a comment, I think Representative Kopetsky will be commenting on the task force on civil commitment that worked in the interim that was appointed by Mr. Murray, and Senator Hamby will be testifying concerning the interim oversight committee. So we have a few different groups involved here that are interested in this bill, and I'd also remind everybody that the governor's budget proposed a substantial funding increase in this area of the law, at least parts of the bill, and I'm certain that our new chief executive and his representative, Ms. Yaden, will let us know what his viewpoints are in that area. So let's get started. Representative Kopetsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, my name is Mike Kopetsky. I'm state representative in District 33, which includes portions of Marion and Polk counties. It is a distinct pleasure to be here today before this very famous and prestigious body. I miss you folks, believe me, more than you can ever imagine. And we'll share privately with you some of the reasons for that instead of my new assignment that I have this session. But 2 years ago, I had the honor of chairing the civil subcommittee of the Ways and Means Committee. And Representative Bellamy, I'm sure, recalls that we heard a measure that which would have greatly expanded the commitment criteria for the mentally ill here in Oregon. And through the hearing process, I made three observations. First, that this is a very important area that we're talking about. And second, that I did not know very much about this area. And third, that it seemed that there was inconsistent application of our existing statutes throughout the state. And fourth, that no one had really taken a comprehensive look at our mental health delivery system since the early 1970s. With that, I asked the director, Mr. Murray, of the Mental Health Division to put together a work plan for a task force which would do that comprehensive review of our mental health system during the interim. He did that, and then we proceeded to table the bill. What you see over here to my right is not a guard against questions from the representative from Lake Oswego, but rather it is some of the documentation that this task force gathered through the year and a half. We worked 8-hour days, one day a month, beginning in July of 85, and I did not read all of this, but I did try to get a better understanding of the system. And I'm very pleased to say that this is one of the most comprehensive task forces that I've ever been associated since my exposure to the legislative process since 1977. I think you should have at your station our final report, and if you'll note a couple of things. One is the first page shows the members of the task force, and I think they will be introduced later, but the important aspect of it is that you see here a nice broad representation of the players that are involved in the mental health system here in Oregon, including users, the family advocates themselves. If you look at page 13 of the report, you will see the recommendations or the recommendations of the task force. And one of the projects of the task force was to develop a list of, well, what should be the goals for a civil commitment system here in Oregon. And so I encourage you to review those in studying the issues involved in House Bill 2324. And I do want to point out two primary recommendations of the task force, which you will hear extensive testimony and discussion about. The first one is on the lower part of page 13, and that is, and you won't see a response to this recommendation in House Bill 2324. And that first recommendation is that we are not, as a state or as counties, providing adequate financial resources to meet the needs of those who need mental health services here in Oregon. Co-equal to that, to our recommendations in terms of a, if you want to set priorities, is found on page 14, where you will find the discussion of the of expansion of the commitment criteria. That is the legal steps or hurdles that one has to achieve before an individual can be involuntarily committed in Oregon. And I think that if I may, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, suggest an approach to studying this measure, and you'll have this nice weekend coming up to do so, I hope, is to study the report, because a lot of the recommendations that the task force came up with do not need legislation, and you will not see those recommendations reflected in statewide policy making proposal, i.e. a bill. And some of the recommendations that we have made, they've been taken care of. For example, establishing standards for those who represent the indigent who are alleged mentally ill individuals. The Indigent Defense Board, for example, has established criteria, minimum competency standards, for example, for attorneys who will be representing these individuals. Second, I would encourage you to study the bill, and also to study Senate Bill 361, a similar measure which Senator Hamby is here today will point out the major differences between this House Bill 2324 and Senate Bill 361. And I think if you do those first three things, you'll start getting an understanding of a broad picture of the mental health delivery system in Oregon. And at that point, I encourage you to step back and take a big picture look at what House Bill 2324 does, and try not to isolate the individual recommendations, but look at the proposal, the individual proposals within the bill as part of a larger picture of making a more efficient, more fair, more understandable system for the mentally ill and the families in this state. You will also, I will offer a caveat, and that is that people will come in and say, don't do this, we can't afford it. And I think if you keep in mind the fact that local governments, that the state, each share a responsibility of providing services to this population and to the families, and ask them those tough questions, and then decide as you will as to whether they are correct or not. But I believe that both local government and the state have a responsibility. As we know from statistical surveys, approximately 30% of the homeless in our society are mentally ill. And back in the early 60s, we instituted more civil rights protections to this population, and at the same time we said it would be cheaper if we would deinstitutionalize this population, treat them in the community. Well, we deinstitutionalized them, and they're now living in the streets of downtown Portland and Salem and other urban areas of our state. And this bill, I believe, and we do know also, let me say, that a part of this population is dangerous, that they may be dangerous to themselves. It's a very small percentage. It's less than 3% is my understanding, that they are dangerous to themselves, they're dangerous to others. In fact, we have had recently tragedies resulting from the mentally ill here in Oregon. And I think that what we're talking about is the fact that Oregon is at this crossroads where we can go down the road that no doubt will lead to the same types of major problems that Detroit or inner city New York, Chicago has with the underclass in their society, or we can do something different. We can take a different road, and we can help these people that have been swept under the rug for too long. And these are the same people, or many of them, are shopkeepers that are sweeping off the front of their sidewalks every morning when they open their shops. So I think we have a responsibility as a state to help these people. And I believe that when we talk about helping the homeless, helping the mentally ill, you're talking about adopting the major provisions of House Bill 2324. If you put this off another 2 years, you're only going to compound the problem, and therefore the time to act is now, and the means is House Bill 2324. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate the fact that you have scheduled this bill early in the session.
Questions of Representative Petsky? Representative Miller.
In your last statement, Representative Kopetsky, you talked in terms of the homeless and the mentally ill. You weren't necessarily equating those, were you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, studies show nationally, statewide in Oregon, and also in my own Salem community, a recent report shows that about 30 to 35% of the homeless population are mentally ill individuals.
Thank you. One further question, Mr. Chairman. You have a copy of this report?
Yes, sir.
Maybe by reading the entire thing, which I would certainly intend to do over the weekend, I can find out the answers to this, but I'm intrigued by the last sentence prior to the list of recommendations, which says, because of the different points of view, consensus was not reached on all of the following recommendations, and then lists the recommendations. One question: was consensus reached on any of them? If so, which?
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, what that statement means is that we had hoped that there would, in our recommendations, which would result in legislation, that there would be a unanimous vote, or maybe one or two votes short of that unanimous vote, to show a clear consensus of the committee. There were a couple of areas where the vote was very close. In fact, the vote on the expansion of the commitment criteria, I believe, was 6-5. But a majority of the task force did support that, and you find that expanded criteria in this bill.
So each of these 10 had the majorities.
Yes, sir.
Support. Would you want to comment at all? I noticed that you were one of the dissenters on that broader interpretation of or intervening earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, I'd be glad to. I've had some time to think about this this proposal, and I think one of my hesitancies about this is whether there would be money to fund the expanded criteria. The state of Washington in 1979, for example, opened the net, broadened their definition tremendously, much more so than what you have before you. They did not fund that expanded criteria, and as a result, there's no problem. The problem was not solved. And as you well know, passing a bill does not solve a problem. They did not send the money along with it. And I was, at that time, there was a different governor, a different director of human resources. This was one of my major concerns with the bill, aside from the civil liberties aspect, that the money would not be there in the budget. The new governor has put the money in the budget to fund this expanded criteria. I support it. However, there's two caveats, or one caveat. If this bill gets to Ways and Means with the expanded criteria, I would prefer this money go to voluntary treatment programs, community service treatment programs. Hopefully we can find the money to do both down in Ways and Means. But I am only one member of that subcommittee down there.
Thank you, Representative, and we do miss you up here, too.
Well, I miss your notes.
I would remind the committee that this bill has a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have to return to committee, and I will return to this committee as soon as we're finished downstairs.
Thank you. Senator Hanby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jeanette Hamby, State Senator from District 5. I welcome this opportunity to discuss both House Bill 2324 with you and the problem of the potentially dangerously mentally ill. I think Representative Kopetsky has fairly well covered the work of tremendous work effort, I might add, of the state-wide task force. He failed to mention, however, that in October 1985, the Board of Multnomah County Commissioners appointed a 17-member task force to study issues relating to the services and responses to the legal, criminal justice, mental health, and other agencies to persons potentially dangerous and chronically mentally ill. In March of 1986, after an extensive study of the issues, the Multnomah County Task Force issued a final report in which they recommended certain changes in the statutes dealing with involuntary commitments. And I assume that committee staff has a copy of the report. But the report found that there was a serious need for not only the additional funds that Representative Kopetsky just spoke to be dedicated to the treatment of the mentally ill in Multnomah County, but they also recommended that the criteria for civil commitment not be broadened. And I'm going to emphasize that. Not to be broadened unless additional resources are made available for the treatment of the additional patients that would result. The reports have been briefly detailed for you, and as you're probably aware, there was a potential conflict that had developed between the Multnomah County Task Force and the Mental Health Division Task Force. Multnomah County, of course, did not want any changes in the present commitment process without the adequate funding. But nevertheless, the Mental Health Division Task Force recommended extensive changes in the commitment procedure and expanded criteria for civil commitment, of course, along with a commitment to expanded funding. As it was, and to ensure that there were no cracks or oversights committed, the legislative leadership requested that there be an oversight committee established to ensure a broad review of both the statewide task force recommendations and the Multnomah County Task Force report. Representative Kopetsky and I, of course, both served on that interim committee, along with the chairman of the Multnomah County Task Force, Rodney Page, and the Mental Health Division Task Force chairman, Dr. Bray, the Assistant Director of Human Resources, along with other health and professional members. House Bill 2324 before you this afternoon represents a consensus reached by the Mental Health Division Task Force. Senate Bill 361 reflects the work of the Mental Health Division Task Force with refinements developed by members of the Legislative Oversight Task Force. I support Senate Bill 361 and urge, of course, that you do also. But for your assistance in analyzing the bills, I have annotated copies of SB 361 to show each provision in it that differs from the bill under consideration in this committee this afternoon, House Bill 2324. They both, of course, have included the additional criteria for civil commitment recommended by the Mental Health Division. The addition of this criteria will reach the chronically mentally ill patients who are not presently subject to the civil commitment law. The legislative task force heard heart-rending testimony from family members about the necessity for including patients who have exhibited a pattern of deterioration to the point of dangerousness or inability to care for self. One of the indices of such deterioration is repeated hospitalizations. And it is on this point that Senate Bill 361 and House Bill 2324 exhibit subtle differences, considered now and in the future. Our legislative task force heard testimony that made it clear that other repeated hospitalizations in other than state institutions should also be considered. The problem is that the addition of other hospitalizations to the criteria for civil commitment could result in the commitment of many more of the chronically mentally ill and thereby greatly increase the financial obligation of the state of Oregon to treat their mental illness. Thus, members of the task force agreed to limit the criteria to only state hospitalizations until the completion of a comprehensive study of the cost of treating all such patients in Senate Bill 361, but recommended that the qualifying word state, which you have highlighted in your embossed 361, be deleted in the next legislative session. Oregon is fortunate to have been selected, by the way, to be a participant in a study by the National Institute of Mental Health, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, on the subject of mental health services funding. I have included a copy of the correspondence about that study along with my testimony. Also, I call your attention to Section 40 of Senate Bill 361. So thus, the crucial difference in the two bills is on page 30 of Senate Bill 361. 361 provides that the criteria for civil commitment be amended in 1990 to include two or more hospitalizations in institutions other than state institutions within the last 3 years. The effect of this seemingly innocuous change would be to greatly expand the number of chronically mentally ill patients who could be committed and thereby to greatly increase the cost of their care. I believe that there is no question that the severity of a person's mental illness is not determined by whether he or she has been admitted to a state mental institution outside of Oregon or a private mental institution rather than a state mental institution, most especially when one considers that admission to the Oregon State Mental Institution is limited to the number of beds in that institution. There is no totally reliable estimate for the number of individuals who would be included in this expanded criteria of repeated state hospitalizations, let alone all repeated hospitalizations, and therefore cost estimates are difficult to make. The Mental Health Division, using information at its disposal, estimates that it could cost as much as $55 million to reach all the chronically and severely mentally ill. Attached to this testimony is a copy of a letter dated November 10, 1986, from Dr. Bray estimating the cost of serving the chronically mentally ill at approximately $34 million and the severely mentally ill at approximately $22 million. I have also attached two other estimates of the cost. The cost of funding the expanded criteria for civil commitment in House Bill 2324 and SB 361 is approximately $10 million, if you notice that first step. By the next legislative session, we should know a great deal more about the cost of serving additionally mentally ill patients, both from the Mental Health Project study and from the task force called for in Section 40 of Senate Bill 361. The important step that I believe this legislative session must take is to add the additional criteria and then make sure that we fund the additional costs that will result. But if we cannot make sure that the funds are available, then neither House Bill 2324 or Senate Bill 361 should be passed. As the Multnomah County Task Force report in the Mental Health Division both repeatedly emphasize, without additional funding, no changes on the commitment criteria should be made because the existing funds are inadequate for the present levels of patients, and any change that will add patients without adding funds should absolutely not be made. I welcome any questions that you may have.
Representative Dix.
Senator, can you tell me how we got to this point where we had to have the task force and the recommendations in these two bills?
Mm-hmm. I call your attention to the first paragraph on page 2 of my testimony identifies that there was this potential conflict between the two study groups. Consequently, legislative leadership identified an oversight committee to ensure that that there was indeed a real consensus. The legislative oversight task force that both Representative Kopetsky and I sit on met for one further meeting after the introduction, or after the finalization, forgive me, of House Bill 2324. Consequently, we met one additional time, did a few other refinements, and the decision was made to add that Section 39 and 40 and somewhat some subtle differences in the liability section.
Mr. Chair, I guess my question is more general than that and refers to the subject matter. But Representative Kopetsky testified that, 30% of the homeless, for instance, are mentally ill. How did we get to the point where we have 30% of those people? I mean, has this been a gradual thing?
Forgive me. There has been a national move since the early 70s to deinstitutionalize our mentally ill. I don't recall how many beds we had, for instance, in Eastern Oregon State Hospital at one time filled. However, there's just, of course, a fraction now. Damish, I'm sure you're aware, is full. Mm-hmm. Even if you wanted voluntary treatment today, there is no room at Damish. And as I say, we had repeated afternoons of testimony of families that were truly desperate for help. And unless their family member that was experiencing traumatic mental illness and potential dangerousness, unless they, in fact, acted out in some sort of a criminal behavior called to the attention by the police, might they receive any help. But, of course, then they were only lodged in the local jail or at Oregon State Penitentiary if their criminal behavior was at that level, rather than receiving the mental health treatment, the earlier intervention that they'd so desperately needed.
And the civil liberties question was the reason why we started to back away from institutionalizing?
Yes, and I think I have been actively involved and very much interested in issues surrounding mental health, and I truly think there were days that we in fact hospitalized far too many and committed far too, the commitment procedure was perhaps a little too easy, but typical as of any pendulum swing, I think perhaps nationally, we are now recognizing that perhaps we have swung a little bit too far, that there needs to be a point where we can intervene a little earlier, still recognizing that very sensitive need for civil rights of the individual, and yet hopeful of treatment prior to any kind of destructive behavior.
Is it your opinion that, for instance, the 30% of the homeless that are mentally ill are suffering tremendously? A little bit, in view of the fact that we'll probably hear testimony at some point about the question of violating those liberties of those very people that we want to possibly institutionalize. Mm-hmm.
As my testimony indicated, we really don't have a true figure that we can look to in the state, and I guess that's one of the reasons for approaching it in sort of an incremental manner. With a firm and committed task force in between to ensure that those figures are firm, are hard, you know. I think I've attached the chart to my testimony. These are estimates, of course, by our own mental health division, and I'm sure, again, that they are, you know, estimates to the best of their ability, but again, one of the reasons, and again, remind the legislators, it's not every day we open up the commitment statute, so it indeed has been, you know, a trial and trauma for everyone involved.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Further questions? I have just a couple.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have, if we implement sections 39 and 40 of the Senate bill, additional, a wider criteria and more people involuntarily committed mm-hmm. in the 1989-91
mm-hmm.
biennium. And I know you gave us some ideas that those figures would probably be substantial.
Mm-hmm. They may well be, but as I say, we're not too sure. We won't know until the interim.
Or, well...
Mm-hmm. You know, when you broaden it just to the limit...